Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast. Today's guest is Olivia Dade. Olivia's latest book is Spoiler Alert, which is out this week. This book is a nod to fan fiction, and it was a fun read. In this interview, we chat about her writing process, how she wrote this book, and what to expect in the next book in the series. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Olivia. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Olivia Dade, and I am a romance author and a lifelong romance reader. And I started publishing in, well, I started writing in 2014. Yes, 2014. And I started publishing in 2015. So it's been a few years now. And right now, I'm an American, but right now I live outside of Stockholm because I have a Swedish husband and we have a daughter who is about to turn 11. So that's the basic information about me. I write mostly romantic comedies. Mm-hmm. A couple more serious books, but generally sort of bawdy rom-coms. Mm-hmm. So romantic comedies, but with graphic sex and swearing.
I love this. I love this so much. So
yes.
So you're a lifelong romance reader. When did you start reading romance, and what were some of your gateway books?
You know, I would love to actually be able to tell you what the first romance is, but I don't remember because I literally was reading them from the time I could read because I would read anything around me. And my mom had a pile of romances in her closet to the left on the floor. And I wasn't supposed to read them, but every time she left, I would go in there and read them. And I did not fully understand what was happening a lot of the time, what the throbbing was all about. Why there were so many pirates was very
oh my gosh.
Because, you know, this was, I'm 43, so this was the, you know, early 80s, so there were a lot of pirates. She did have some contemporary romances, but mostly historicals like Kathleen Woodyweiss and others, and so I honestly don't remember what the first one I read was. From the time, you know, even the children's books I was reading, once I got old enough to read sort of tween and teen books, they had sort of, I think Silhouette had it, was like, there was a series called Sweet Dreams, which was basically romances for teenagers. And there was a Sunfire series, which was essentially historical romances for teenagers and tweens. And so basically I'm literally a lifelong romance reader from the time I can remember.
I love this. So tell us what inspired you to become a writer.
Well, you know, as I said, I started in 2014. I should say that there are writers that you will talk to, and I'm sure you've talked to many of them, who always made up stories in their heads and journaled and were writing, you know, basically intended to write books from the time they were young. I did not. I loved writing, but I always assumed that I was only good at academic writing. My intention once upon a time had been to be a professor. So I got my master's degree, was actually in a PhD program. And I actually, even academic writing, I loved. The process of writing always really made me happy. But I just assumed that was the only type of writing I was good at. Mm-hmm. But sometime in 2014, I honestly have no idea quite what happened. At the time, I do know I was depressed and sort of trying to work through that in therapy and so forth. And at some point, I sort of sat down and I just wrote a scene, which is probably the first fictional sort of thing that I'd written since, you know, high school. Mm-hmm. And that scene wasn't going to go anywhere, but it felt good to write it. And it cleared my head in a way that I really needed, because when you're really, for me, when I'm very immersed in writing, I am not consciously thinking really as I write. I mean, my brain is working, but I can basically sit down and look up 2 hours later and not have much memory of what happened in those 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And in those 2 hours, all the things that are cluttering my brain are gone. Mm. And it is deeply joyful for me, because I do struggle again with anxiety and things like that. It's a, you know, sort of a flow state, and there are very few things that can sort of switch off my brain and reboot it quite the same way. So that was sort of the beginning of that for me. And then I just, from there, I wrote a full-length book, which will never see the light of day. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, and then my next story got published. So that's so how I started.
So what was that journey to get that first book published?
It was way too short, actually. And I'm not even joking when I say that. Because I'm very grateful, certainly, for the... who published me, first of all, the EPUB, you know, like digital first publisher who published me. But it was my second story that I had written. It was based on a submission call. At the time, Entangled had a submission call for stories set on New Year's Eve, where people fell in love over the course of New Year's Eve. So my goal for that submission call was basically to see if I could get some feedback, because I pretty much was sure I was not ready. My other goal was to have a plot, which my first book had not. I was like, you know, there, you know, story experts often advise having a plot. So I thought I would have one. So I wrote it, and it's a book that is Broken Resolutions became Broken Resolutions. And I actually got several offers on it. Mm-hmm. And it did end up getting published, you know, it's a novella. It got published by Digital First Publisher in December of 2015. It is not by far my best work. And mm-hmm. so when I say that I think it was too short, I'm being completely sincere, because I think that there are glimmers there of what, you know, I think that my voice was pretty clear. But there were a lot of technical aspects and things that I would never do again. And I kind of wish that I had waited longer. And so that I'm not sort of looking back on it. You know, I got my rights back just this past year. And I don't think it's ever going to show up again, at least as something to buy. I'm still sort of debating whether to have it as a free extra on my website or not, but I don't think I would ever put it for sale again. Mm-hmm. So while I'm still very flattered and grateful that they wanted my story, I wish that I had sort of given myself the opportunity to become better at what I did, mm-hmm. for my writing to become better before I published it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. I think it's just like, you know, as you write more books, like, you learn each single time, you know, you learn new techniques, you learn new characters, you figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And so, you know, yeah, having your second story published can be, you know, it's kind of like, I wish I could learn a little bit longer. It makes more sense.
Right. At the time, I just did not know what I didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like anything when you first start doing it. I did not know enough to know where my weaknesses lay. And I, over the years, I put in the work to try to correct, or at least, you know, mitigate some of those weaknesses, mm-hmm. and hopefully build on my strengths. Yeah. But, you know, at the time, I just had no clue. I mean, so, you know, I was not like I was young. I was in my 30s, late 30s, but I, as an author, I was new, and I didn't know. And now I do. And hopefully my writing is better for it.
And now you do. So you're a hybrid author. What do you like about being an indie author?
I am a bit of a control freak. I think there is real pleasure for me in knowing that what I put out into the world is 100% me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the characters I want to write, is the stories I want to write. It does not matter if a publisher would call that story marketable or high concept or anything like that. If I want to write, I mean, Teach Me was my first self-published book. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to write a book about 40-something high school teachers, mm-hmm. like a relatively, you know, quiet book, I think it's, I'm very proud of the book, but it's a quiet book, you know, it's, a lot of it is about toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. you know, it's a fat heroine, unabashedly fat heroine, and the hero is slightly shorter than her when she's wearing heels, and like, there are a lot of things that I just said, I will write exactly what I want to write without mm-hmm. compromise, and then give it a cover that it was precisely what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And there is a real pleasure in knowing that any success you might find with that book, or anyone who connects with that book, it's because of you. It's not because someone else marketed it or came up with the idea or sort of, you know, the fact that it is 100% you on the page. And that is a real pleasure. Mm-hmm. It is a, it was satisfying in a way that I did not know it would be. Mm-hmm. So no matter what happens, and I've had, to be clear, I've had a great experience with Avon, especially, that's the publisher I'm with now. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, it's going to be my print debut, because my other books, the Librarian series that I started with, because they were digital first, you could get them print on demand, but they weren't going to be in many bookstores, if any. So I've had a great experience with Avon too, but I would never give up at least having the option to self-publish, just because there are always going to be stories that I want to tell that a publisher is not going to want to publish, mm-hmm. That I want to tell. And this gives me a means to do so in the way that I would, you know, that I'm proud of. So mm-hmm. yes.
I love this. And so what's been the most surprising aspect in the process of getting your books traditionally published? Like, since indie, you get to control the deadlines, the launch, the cover, all the different aspects. Getting a book traditionally published may come with a whole set of different things, like, you know, new deadlines and expectations. What has been the most surprising thing about that process?
I think I knew some of it already, because, you know, my first books were traditionally published, even though it was EPUB. So, mm-hmm. I mean, some aspects of it I knew about already. Like the fact that, unlike in indie publishing, because it's not up to me, like if I find later in my self-published books that there's something that I would want to change or mistakes mm-hmm. that I made, I can go through and make those corrections.
Yeah.
With a traditionally published book, unless it's egregious, yeah. what's there is there. Yeah. It's done. And so the last round, I mean, obviously I'm still nervous before I, you know, it's time for everyone to see it on release day. Mm-hmm. But there's a little less nervousness knowing that I could fix something that was wrong. Mm-hmm. There's more pressure in the last few rounds of edits in traditional publishing, because it's sort of this now or never feeling. Mm-hmm. Like if I don't catch it now, it's going in the book and I may not ever be able to fix it. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I kind of forgot about a little bit. Mm-hmm. I will say, and it sounds like, I swear to you, this is the truth, is that the part that's surprising to me about this experience of traditional publishing is that, I mean, Avon has really gone full force behind this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they've had two Goodreads giveaways of 100 books each, print books.
Oh my gosh.
Like, as an indie author, you know, as a self-published author, like, I'm not doing stuff like that. I mean, I can't afford that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the ones who, you know, I found the cover artist for Spoiler Alert. They asked me if I had anyone I was thinking about, and I looked at a bunch of people, and I looked specifically at Mimi Grace's cover for Along for the Ride. And I found out that that was Lenny Kaufman who had done that. And I looked at Lenny Kaufman's website, and she does a variety of different types of, especially women, but men too, different body types, you know, just a variety, very diverse group of people. And she illustrates them beautifully. And so Lenny Kaufman, whom I've used for my self-published covers recently too, I originally got her for Spoiler Alert. And I saw what, you know, I said I wanted her, and they got her for me. And then I saw her cover she made, and I was like, oh, I want her for my self-published stuff too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love this.
But the fact that they let me do that is just amazing. Just like with Alexis Daria.
Yeah.
You had me at Ola, which is just such a beautiful, amazing cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is... I was going to say this is between us, but it's not, but whatever. Alexis was able to do the same thing. Like, she was able to say, I would like this illustrator.
Yeah.
And we have the same agent. So my agent was like, look, if you're going to have an opinion about the illustrator, like, you should say it, because there's a chance that you could actually have some say in this. And I did, and I will. So, I mean, that has been surprising to me, is that how much say I actually have gotten in a lot of things that I did not anticipate getting, that I had not necessarily had in my first traditional publishing experience. Mm-hmm. It's been a real pleasure so far. I mean, there's drawbacks to everything, but Avon has been super supportive, and when I got back my cover, I mean, I will admit, I was nervous that they would want to put someone on the cover, an illustration that was not as of a heroine who was not as fat as I wanted. Mm-hmm. Because traditionally, romance covers don't have fat people on the covers. And I was nervous. And I got my cover, and I cried, because she was unabashedly, unmistakably gorgeous and fat. Mm-hmm. You could not look at her and say, well, maybe she's a size 14. Like, she is beautiful, and there is no denying that she is also fat. Mm-hmm. And that meant the world to me. And, you know, the one sort of feedback I gave was just that her waist needed to be a little less small, because it was nipped in, and they're like, okay. And then they changed it. So it's actually been a real pleasant surprise. The whole experience, they've been really wonderful for me. So yeah.
That's so great. And I love the cover. I think the cover reflects the book, like what you can expect from reading the book. Like, you see the characters, the vision, the fan fiction, you see it all within the cover.
So. Yeah. Lenny Kaufman did a gorgeous job, and so did the art department at Avon. And
yeah.
I mean, I think it was just a wonderful sort of confluence of the story that I had written, and the art that Lenny created, and the cover design, and just Avon really getting behind what I wanted the story to be and to say. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I love this. So let's talk about your writing. Do you file online, or do you see where to shortly do?
Well, I discovered that first full-length book I wrote that will always remain on my hard drive, that if I did not have any outline, that I would also not have any plot. So I discovered that I need to have some sort of framework.
Okay.
It's not a traditional outline. I call it a story arc.
Okay.
What I do is I create a document where I give sort of basic information about the background, about the characters, what they look like, what their childhood is like, what are the things they need to work through? What's going to be their character arc throughout the book? What are the things they need to work on so that at the end of the book, you can say that they have grown and sort of are ready for a happy ending, right? Mm-hmm. So once I have those sort of characters down, then I start getting into what's going to happen within the story. Mm-hmm. And it's not broken down chapter by chapter typically. What it is basically, here are the main things that need to happen over the course of the story. So like one thing could be, like for instance, spoiler alert, right? Mm-hmm. One thing might be they go on a date to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. She's bored at first because mm-hmm. he just seems completely vapid. Yep. And then at some point she gets a sense that maybe he's not. Mm-hmm. And then he finds out that they're friends on, you know, that they're actually fanfic BFFs, mm-hmm. right? That will be basically all I would say about that scene. Mm. So it's all filled, like, those are the main things that need to happen, right? Mm-hmm. But what happens while they're at the restaurant and how that's all going to play out is not something that I've determined ahead of time. So it gives me some room to play, but also I know what the point is, right? Mm-hmm. Like with the chapter, here's what needs to happen, but how that's going to happen, I sort of leave up to me. So it gives me, for me, is the best of both worlds because it keeps me on track as far as making sure that I'm following along with what needs to happen, what I need to accomplish in that scene, while not making me beholden to, while giving me room to be creative while writing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of the ideas, inspirations, characters, you know, different tidbits?
Well, I, you know, within each individual story, you know, I have the story arc, which is a file that I have. And I also have a character inspiration photos file usually, or I put that at the end of my story arc where I have, I'm not good at sort of coming up with what people look like from thin air. So yeah. I usually do have specific people that I'm sort of, you know, if they can be famous or non-famous, people that I'm thinking about while I write to help me with descriptions, because that's not my, like, yeah, I'm just not good at making up imaginary people yeah. as far as what they look like. Otherwise, yes, but not their looks. As far as story ideas that I'm not actually writing, I have a story ideas file that I keep, which can be anything from, I don't know, did you read the He's Come Undone anthology by any chance?
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So I had a 3-word thing in my ideas file. It's just like a big document with like, with just tons, lists, a list of just ton of things. Mm-hmm. And one of my entries was in all caps, murder diorama heroine. And so I was like, well, what the hell? When we were doing He's Come Undone, I was like, you know, let's go for it. So I took that out of my ideas file and reminded myself about Frances Klessner Lee, who did the Nutshell Studies of Unexplained Death, those murder dioramas, and then went for it, right, with Poppy. But there are also ones that are like, there may be more, it could be titles that I'm interested in. Or it could be a specific type of character. Like there was an older reality TV show, not older, but it's not on air anymore. It's called Cutthroat Kitchen on Food mm-hmm. Network. And there is this one contestant, a chef named Kate. And she went by the nickname, they called her Princess Kate. And I thought she was hilarious. I loved her so, so much. And I still, to this day, I want to write a character that sort of is inspired by what I loved about her. Like that sort of, where she was like gleefully, like she was trying to win, but like was super good natured about it. And when people sabotaged her, she didn't get mad about it because it was just a game. Mm-hmm. And everyone seemed to really love her. And I just thought she was wonderful. So it can be anything. All of those things are in my file. But I get ideas pretty often, but then I just, you know, I write them down a paragraph or two in the file and then just revisit when I have free time, you know, if I'm not on contract, and sort of see if anything sort of captures my attention as something I want to do next.
Mm-hmm. I love this. And so speaking of characters, and you mentioned you don't have a good job about imaginary characters and coming up with descriptions. How do the characters come to you? Do you write about them and they just start speaking to you? or do you write like questionnaires? Like, what's the process like to develop the characters?
I think, well, I mean, I can talk a little bit about sometimes, you know, if I'm coming at it from the perspective that I want to write a certain type of character, mm-hmm. you know, like the Princess Kate, then that would sort of give me a sense of what that character is like. But a lot of times, with Teach Me, mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted, obviously, them both to be teachers. Mm-hmm. And I knew that because I want to talk some about toxic masculinity, which again, this is why this was self-published. it's not like I don't know that that's like exactly what publishers necessarily want to hear me go to them. But I wanted them, part of my goal for it was thinking about the various ways that toxic masculinity hurts everyone. And that includes men as mm-hmm. well as women. And so I was trying to sort of come up with a character, in this case, Martin, who is the hero, and sort of say, well, then how would he have been hurt by that? And then I said, well, if you were a shyer, sort of more sensitive kid and had a family that was very invested in this idea of like what boys should be like, mm-hmm. you know, and you had, you know, sort of rough, you know, a father who was very invested in that vision and like, was very deeply disappointed that his son was not what he wanted a son to be. What would that mean? And then on her end, I have her serve in a position where she's run into some difficulties with her supervisor, and has struggled with in other ways too, but that was sort of her aspect is that her supervisor is giving her a hard time for various reasons. And that's part of the same thing. So like her supervisor is kind of a dick and sort of an exemplar of toxic masculinity. But that Martin is himself not like that mm-hmm. and has suffered because of this idea that if you are a boy, you have to be a certain way, that manhood has to look a certain way, which is bullshit. And so that was sort of where I came from that. And each book is different. You know, it depends on what drew me into it. Like 40 Love, I mean, obviously I was going to have a 40-year-old, and I decided that I wanted to be an age gap with the heroine being 40. Mm-hmm. And then if it was going to be about tennis, if you're using, that book came from the title. I was watching tennis, and I was like, 40 Love would be a great name for a book. Mm-hmm. And then it's the only book I've ever written based on a title. and then I was like, okay, well, if he's younger and he's like this tennis guy, why is he not, you know, what's his story for why she would meet him? And then I was like, I don't really want to deal with having to research what it would actually be like on the ATP tour. Mm-hmm. So then he can't be a professional tennis player anymore. So then why would he have left by the age of 26? Mm-hmm. So then I got into the backstory of, okay, if he's, you know, had substantial injuries that forced him to retire from what was meant to be, you know, his life profession at the age of 26, what would that mean for him? Mm-hmm. In that, you know, these kids, they are kids. They go on they're 16 and 17 mm-hmm. on these international tours, and this is all they've done. They haven't gone, you know, they don't always, you know, school was secondary for a lot of these kids, a lot of these people, they have not explored other things that they're good at. This has been their entire social circle, their professional life, all of it encompassed in this one sport. And then it's gone at the age of 26. Mm-hmm. And then what does that mean when you look ahead to the rest of your life and you don't even know what you're good at other than that? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And so that sort of was the birth of that. Versus a woman who knows where she is in her professional life and is settled in her life at the age of 40 and happy with her life. So why is she going to take a chance on this 26-year-old who doesn't know what the hell he's going to do next, right? Mm-hmm. So even if he's hot and funny and smart and sweet. Anyway, that was much more than you wanted to know. But
yeah, this is
basically, perfect. I mean, depending on how I come at the story, you just start thinking ideas about what sounds right to you and what would work for an interesting story and sort of go from there.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about spoiler alert. What was that source of inspiration?
So I moved to Sweden about 2 years ago.
Okay.
In 2018, almost exactly 2 years ago. And it was hard and it was lonely. And I found myself unable to read published books for a while.
Mm.
Once you, and this may be true for bloggers too, and people like you as well, once reading and writing become part of your job,
mm-hmm.
it's sometimes hard to lose yourself in a story the same way that you used to be able to.
Yes.
So, and I'm sure you've experienced that as well, that you're too busy analyzing it for, do I like it? Do I not like it? What do I like about it? What don't I like about it? Or in my case, I'll be like, this book really, you know, for instance, this is just one particular case. Like, this book really did well. It really was critically acclaimed, or it sold a lot of copies. Why do I think that is? Do I think it was the premise? Do I think it was the characters? Do I think it was the writing? Do I think it was the cover? Was it the marketing? And, you know, if I don't like a book, then I'm thinking, well, what didn't I like about this? Is this something I should watch for in my own writing? And it's just hard to, and a lot of times you know the author, so then there can be a certain amount of pressure because it's awkward if you don't like it. And it just becomes fraught in a way that it was not when I first started reading. And I'm sure this is true for you as well.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about fan fiction, right? Fan fiction, which I unbelievably had not read before I moved to Sweden, even though I've been a lifelong shipper. Since it's not traditionally published and it's anonymous for the most part.
Yeah.
It allowed me to sink into stories in a way that I had not been able to for a while. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there's nothing like, there's no, I don't have to look at how many copies it sold. It's, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, all you can do is just read the story. I don't know who this person is. Like, it's not on the bookshelf. It's not competition and it's not my friends. It's a random story, and they're just wildly creative, and there are just amazing fanfic authors out there. So I literally read nothing but fanfiction for an entire year.
Mm.
And that was not deliberate on my part. I couldn't read anything else, and it was so pleasurable for me to be able to lose myself in a story again. It was just visceral relief. So part of Spoiler Alert is sort of a dedication, a love note to fandom and to fan fiction, because it kind of saved my sanity. And I really do think fandom is fundamentally, you know, for all of its problems, and there are problems.
Mm-hmm.
There's racism within fandom, there's sexism, there's fatphobia, all of those things. But fandom is such a creative act, you know, cosplay, fan fiction, all of it is just, it's amazing to me, and it's powered by enthusiasm for characters and stories and love for characters and stories. And that's just wonderful to me. And also when I was reading my fan fiction, I'm a brainy, the brainy fandom, Brienne of Tarth and Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones is my ship of choice, my OTP.
Okay.
I was reading, I think, like a comments under one of the fics, and somebody was joking that Nikolai Coster-Waldau, and they didn't mean it. They don't honestly believe that he does this, but they were joking that he would start shipping wars between the Jamie Brienne versus Jamie Cersei shipping wars, that he would go on and basically foment these wars in the name of his character, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, and I didn't want to take that tack with it, but I thought to myself, what if he did have an actor who wrote fan fiction about his own character?
Mm-hmm.
And why would he do that? And of course, the reception of the last season of Game of Thrones sort of gave me a very easy idea for why someone would do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
if they were really dissatisfied, like fundamentally just like horrified by what happened to their own character on their show. and wanting to basically write fix to sort of set it right. And so that's sort of where that came from. While understanding that this is, while somewhat inspired by Nikolai Coster-Waldau, is not Nikolai Coster-Waldau in any way. But that was sort of where that came from. Yes.
So what was the process to do world building? Because it's not normal. We see world building in like paranormal. We may see it in historical, like, but in contemporary, we may not see it as like, you know, the whole world, like, because you have a story within a story. And so what was that process like?
When I was planning this, my books do not usually have this many moving parts. This book had a lot of moving parts to it. So the first thing I did, it was like I had to start with a fictional series of books that had to be sort of an epic sweeping fantasy.
Yeah.
Similar to Game of Thrones, but not Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And it's not. I mean, it's based on mythology, the Aeneid and mythology.
Yeah.
Which I thought could be juicy because people know some about mythology. But it's, you know, and there'd be a lot of drama and things like that. Okay. So that had to come up. Okay. I had to try to come up with a premise for what would be a best-selling line of fantasy books. I was like, okay. And then I had to come up with how the TV show would change that, right? Mm-hmm. Because the goal here is that they would be dissatisfied with how it deviated from the books or sort of, you know, came off after the books. So then I was like, okay, so here's basically what happens in the books that don't really exist. And then here's how the television show would deviate from that. And then you have the quote unquote real world, which I also created, which is where, you know, this actor and April, who is a geologist and a fan and a cosplayer and fan fiction writer, the world that they live in, which is the actual story of the book. But the first thing I did was come up with the fake book series and then the fake TV series and then the actual story and then how their fan fiction would take the fake TV series and the fake line of books and what they would do to it in their fan fiction. So at some point I called some of my friends and I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? I just start laughing. I'm like, what is wrong with me? I mean, these are not usually the sorts of things that I do, but at that point, I'm like, they bought the story. I got to tell it. And I ended up really loving it, but it was just, it was a lot of moving parts. You were right.
Yeah. So. And then the B-movie plots too, because we got those too.
Yes.
You know, it was like, it was fantastic. I love it just because it was immersive, but it's like, it definitely, now that I think about it, as you say, like how much work it took, I'm like, oh my gosh, I bow to you because it's a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah. I mean, all the different movie premises and then the scripts, you know, the scripts and fixed snippets, because all the fixed snippets, since they were by different people, those had to have different voices.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what would Marcus's fix sound like versus April's? How would they read differently? Mm-hmm. Or like Top Me Aeneas, one of the other fic writers. Yeah. So that the fic writers, their voices were somewhat distinct within all the fake little fan fiction that I wrote for books that I made up. And yeah, it was, I will say this, is that I'm proud as hell of that. Like, I'm proud as hell of many of my books, but I can tell you this book, it took some damn work. and it was fun though, to write in different voices. Like, you know, I wrote some of the, you don't care about this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Like some of them I did in first person or I did in present tense, which are not something I ever do with my own writing, as a way to make it sound different, to make sure that you weren't just reading something that seemed like my writing when it's supposed to be written by someone else, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was fun, but it was a lot.
Oh my gosh. And so thank you for sharing plus size representation, like fat characters in romance. Like, I personally, I'm plus size, I'm fat. I love seeing my body represented in a sense of falling in love, because so much of the media tells us, like, you're not supposed to fall in love, you're not attractive. And so why was it important to share that part of the story, you know, in your characters?
Well, you know, several years back, there was a book that was a lot about fatness and fat representation. Mm-hmm. And I found that book deeply horrifying, mm-hmm. and hurtful. And it made me really, really pissed. And at that point, I had been writing female MCs, especially main characters, especially in a variety of sizes. Mm-hmm. Like, I had at that point already written a couple of fat heroines from Mayday and Ready to Fall for my librarian series. But I'd also written a very athletic heroine, and I had written a very skinny heroine, and I had written, someone who's more average size and one who's very tall. So, I mean, my goal was body diversity, right?
Yeah.
But then after that book came out, and again, you told me it was okay to swear, so I'm taking you at your word. I was just like, fuck it. All my heroines from here on out are going to be fat. because if you're going to, if this other author is going to put that out there as fat representation in the world, like, no, I am going to counter that in every chance I can get, because I do not need to, because I think it was harmful. And I wanted to give some decent options out there for people who want to see themselves on the page, mm-hmm. who are fat, who want to see themselves on a page in a way that does not hurt. And I've been looking for that. I mean, I'm a fat kid, a fat girl who grew into a fat woman. And mm-hmm. I've been looking for myself on the pages of the romances I read since then. Mm-hmm. I didn't see myself very often. And when I did, it was often in hurtful ways.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal was to write books that I would have wanted to read,
mm-hmm.
that I needed to read. I mean, I'm a survivor of disordered eating.
Mm-hmm.
There are books that I wanted to have books out there that would not hurt people to read, and that would be very clear that you do not need to be thin to be desired. You do not need to be thin to be loved. And you do not need to be thin to have a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. But yeah. Most books that you read, you would believe that.
Yep.
And I wanted to counter that very strongly. So, yep.
I love it. I thank you. I appreciate it as someone who's like, you know, I think in my own body issues, like I have disordered eating. Like, I actually was a fat bulimic, and that was something that I felt very like conflicted about it, because it's like the expectation you're supposed to have a certain body type to have this certain eating disorder. And you're right. Like, it's not true. And now it's something that you have to come to terms with it. So I love reading about books that are like, where it's celebrated, where it doesn't feel like this bigger issue. Like, it's like, you can fall in love at any size, you know, you don't need this specific, you know, body type to be attractive. And I think that's like, that's something that I appreciate when I'm looking for romance, so looking for a diversity of romance, a diversity of body types too. Like, you don't have a six-pack ab, you know, and perky boobs to fall in love, you know.
Right. My boobs personally have not perked for a couple decades. Once,
yeah.
Once you get above a certain size, like, the perk is gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and I'm sorry that you've struggled with that too. And, you know, there's a lot of incidental, casual fat shaming,
mm-hmm.
In books of all sorts, but in romance. You know, I'll be reading along a book that has nothing to do with fatness. I mean, the main characters aren't fat. And they'll just randomly have a side character who's, a lot of times, they don't even name it. They just say something casually ugly about that character's weight or their size. And it's just so unnecessary. And it, I mean, my hope is that, you know, I want as many people as possible to love my books, but I would be especially happy if the people who have been hurt by a lot of books in the past, because they're coming at it, you know, with body image issues and as fat readers, that they know hopefully that my books are not going to hurt them. Mm-hmm. So,
yes. Well, thank you for all that you do. And thank you for having fat, you know, characters. Like, I really appreciate it.
It is obviously my pleasure too. So, but thank you. I appreciate you giving me a chance on that.
Awesome. So what are some of your upcoming projects? What can we expect for the follow-up from Spoiler Alert?
I am actually in the midst of doing my first round of my own edits before I send it to a publisher. Okay. The follow-up book is Alex and Lauren. Mm-hmm. It is the best friend of Marcus in Spoiler Alert, the hero of Spoiler okay. Alert. And then the woman who's assigned is his minder mm-hmm. on the production of Gods of the Gates, Lauren. And so that'll actually be coming out, it's basically like the books will come out once a year. So it's going to be next October.
Okay.
And it's called Slow Burn, and it lives up to the title. my books, a lot of times, you know, the sex, once you get there, is going to be relatively graphic, but sometimes it comes, so to speak, earlier than others.
Yeah.
Earlier than other times. And this time, I lived up to it. Largely because, you know, her job is sort of taking care of him, and I was not going to have them. To me, there were just too many weird power dynamics with that. So, yeah. Like, while that was the case, that wasn't happening. So that's the follow-up to that. I may end up doing, you know, once I get the edits done for that, I might maybe peek at maybe a self-published project, but for now, that's my main thing. And it has been a busy summer with self-publishing stuff, so I'll probably take a couple months off at some point and just refill the well, as they say. But Alex, the hero of Slow Burn, I find deeply entertaining.
Yes, I was going to say, his fan fiction was the most amusing. The fact that you incorporated pegging into his fan fiction was like, oh my god. He was just so good.
Yeah. yes. So in Spoiler Alert, right, without giving away too much, Alex looks up fan fiction about the character he plays, who is Cupid, is like an adult male Cupid, like Cupid and Psyche, that story. Not the baby. So, and he finds that all of his... that his fandom is of the very firm belief that he is a bottom, right? And this is partially inspired because a lot of people look at the character of Jamie Lannister and are like, yeah, he has real little spoon energy. And so I was like, okay, so I had this idea that Alex's character, the whole fandom would be like, yeah, he's totally a bottom. And that there would be this, the most popular fix in his fandom would be him getting pegged, happily getting pegged, joyfully, getting pegged. And so he decides to participate in that, and is very intrigued by that.
Yeah.
So he throws in anything he does 1000%. Where is that quote from? There's a quote, and I saw it recently, that either you don't care at all or you care 100 and crazy percent. So he throws himself into that.
Yes.
But no, I find him deeply fun to write, like really entertaining to write. So I hope people will like the story. Right now it's way too long. So we'll see what happens with that.
This is so exciting. I'm looking forward to it. Because I was like, I like Spoiler, but I was like, I was, when Alex was mentioned, I was like, I hope he gets a story. And then at the end, he's getting a story. And I was like,
You know, he was not meant to be a follow-up story.
Really?
Yeah. My contract actually was for the second book. It's a two-book contract. Second book was supposed to be for Maria and Peter.
Oh.
Who are sort of filming off on an island by themselves. which meant that they wouldn't have as much contact with, like, Marcus, so they weren't in the story as much.
Yeah.
But his best friend, obviously, is.
Yeah.
And over the course of the book, I just sort of fell in love with Alex. Mm-hmm. And so I finally had this really sheepish conversation with my editor where I'm like, so...
Yeah.
I was supposed to write next. I was supposed to write Maria and Peter. But how would you feel about this book that I clearly set up? Like, I was totally cheating because I did totally set it up for Alex to have the next book. But I mean, I was like, if you don't want me to, I'll change it. But, and then she's like, really? It wasn't supposed to be Alex? She'd forgotten.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, it wasn't supposed to be Alex. I'm like, no. She's like, ah, it's fine.
Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful. I think you just set it up. Like, you set it up, Alex's book, you know, the story. You're like, it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen. And then at the end, it's like, it's gonna happen. You're gonna get it. So, so great.
No, I love him. He's a scene stealer, and hopefully, he will also be. I mean, I had a lot of fun in his own book writing him. I found him, like, really sympathetic and deeply entertaining and very funny. So the energy that sort of came to me is big, delightful asshole energy. Oh. But he's kind of an asshole, but he's really very charming.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. So yes. Now let's go to our round of book recommendations. The number you share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Oh, it's definitely 100, as I said, 100%. It is romance. Okay. Although I do read some mysteries with romantic subplots.
Yeah.
You know, and occasionally if, you know, some nonfiction, other things, but I do struggle with anxiety, and I have found that the promise of a happy ending really helps when I'm reading, and other genres don't have that. So, so book recommendations. Okay. So I read all types of romance. I read, with the exception, I don't usually read YA.
Okay.
And not inspirational either, but other than that, pretty much anything. So historical, paranormal, erotica, futuristic, all of it. Erotic romance. So a couple of recommendations I would have would be Mia Sosa. Now, full disclosure, she is a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. but The Worst Best Man is hilarious and just so clever and mm-hmm. such a great concept and just really well done. And I love her and I love her work. Mm-hmm. So Mia Sosa, The Worst Best Man, probably the author who writes nothing like me at mm-hmm. all, but who has inspired, I think, some of my better writing would be Joanna Bourne. Mm. She writes historical romances that are set often spies between Britain and France during Napoleonic France, and her books are, I could talk about them forever, but she is such an exemplar of how to do point of view, deep point of view effectively. Like, when you're in someone's perspective in her book, mm-hmm. everything they say, everything they do, the things they notice, how they react to things are all specific to that character. There is nothing generic in her books. Mm-hmm. It is astounding to me. And she has a way of words that I just think she is such a, whatever she wrote, she was going to be an amazing storyteller. Like, her books are probably the ones I reread most these days. So, like, my absolute favorite of hers is The Black Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to start with that one because so much of the background of that story is in some of her other books, too.
Okay.
Like, the hero in that, Adrian Hawkehurst Black Hawk, is in basically all the other books that she writes. As a kid, as a young adult, like, it's all happening in the background because he meets the heroine of this book. Mm-hmm. when they're kids.
Ah.
And all of this is happening. And the Black Hawk itself, I mean, it stands on its own too, but it's sort of nice to come at from the other books as well. Mm-hmm. But it is sweeping and funny and romantic. And there's just, it's really beautiful. It's a beautiful book. I love that book so much. There are lines that just come to me sometimes that I just think are amazing. But one that does not require maybe quite as much, it's exactly. less complicated, I would say, is The Rogue Spy by her. I really love too. And Forbidden Rose. Oh. And her novellas are all good too. She's just really good.
Love this. I love this. I have a couple of her books actually. So I've been meaning to go back to some historical authors. So I will definitely be putting her on top of my TBR.
Yeah, I think she's amazing. And I would say that, you know, there are a couple books coming out that I really liked that I've been able to read ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So there is How to Fail at Flirting by Denise Williams.
Yeah.
That's her debut. That's coming out in December. And like I highlighted so many lines in that. But she's just very, it's the sort of hero I like. He's like the sweetest and he's all in. He's funny and sexy and sweet and smitten, which I love.
Yeah.
And I think that she just has a very warm voice, a very sympathetic voice for her characters. And she has a lot of, you know, great lines in there too. So I, there are some trigger warnings in there. Like there's an abusive previous relationship that comes into play. And so, I mean, it's not necessarily, that's something to sort of look into, but I think it's really well done. I think it's a very good book. And I also read Jenny Holiday's A Princess for Christmas, which in August, maybe it's not coming out till October. And that's very sweet. It's like a Hallmark movie with sex.
Yes. Yes, I'm reading it right now. And the way I can describe it is just a Hallmark movie with steamy feeds. Like, it's just like, it has the best of Hallmark. At the same time, it has the best of like what a little romance, you know? So.
Yeah, with the heat dial a little higher. So
yeah.
So yeah, I think those coming up too are great as well.
Awesome. And so tell us where we can find you online.
So in theory, I have a Facebook account, but I do not suggest trying to find me there.
No, that's no more.
Because this is going to be terrible. I don't think I've actually checked it for over a year. I'm pretty sure people have probably written me, and I really do feel bad about that, but I only have, like, you know, sometimes, I don't know if you've heard if your listeners have heard the spoons analogy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just don't, again, I do have some anxiety and depression issues. Sometimes I just don't have this, if I only have spoons for one social media site, it's going to be Twitter. Like,
I love it.
All day, every day. So I am on Twitter. I do occasionally take short breaks because the world is, again, somewhat apocalyptic. Occasionally, I need some breaks from that. But I am on Twitter a lot, or my website is oliviadade.com. Or you can send me an email at olivia@oliviadade.com. And on Twitter, I am at Olivia Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S. Because at some point I may publish like a sci-fi or futuristic romance. So I wanted to give myself some leeway if I had another Olivia pen name. So,
yep. I love this. Thank you, Olivia, for being in the show.
Oh, I'm so glad that you asked me. And, you know, I'm sure I rambled a lot, but they were lovely questions. And I'm just really grateful that you thought of me and flattered.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.